Welcome back to Exploring Route 4. I'm Rick Ganley. We're spending some time listening to highlights of our summer series on the historic road that runs through the heart of the Granite State. If you drive Route 4 through Northwood, you'll pass a cluster of colorful cabins, the cottages at Harvey Lake. Generations of travelers have gone there to relax, despite it being just a stone's throw from one of the busiest roads in the state. NHPR reporters Sarah Gibson and Annie Ropeek spent a night there to see what draws people to those cottages and what brings them back. Sarah starts it off.
The Harvey cottages are right off Route 4, and turning off the main drag can feel a bit treacherous.
It is a very busy road.
Oh my God.
Okay. Here we are.
I drive past a rambling two-story house down a gravel road to six cottages, all facing away from Route 4 towards the lake. The owners have told me, go to the yellow cabin, the door will be open.
I guess this is the yellow cottage. I guess this is mine. Oh my gosh, it's quite lovely.
I get there an hour later.
Hi, Amy.
Sarah is already relaxing, and I take the tour. There's a little kitchen area with a stove, sink, and mini fridge, a real bathroom, even an air conditioner.
We've got a little screened-in porch with a beautiful view of the water. And we have our own grill and a fire pit and a picnic table.
Hi, you all.
Hi there. Hi.
Right next to us, reading under the pine tree by the Blue Cabin, are Russ Wagenfeld and his wife, Eva Klinovsky, from Rhode Island.
I probably started coming down Route 4 in the 50s. And so this place was here. And this place was named Ma, M-A, Ruse. Ma Ruse.
Back then, Russ says he and his friends came by here a lot on their way to the local ice cream spot, Johnson's.
Whenever we would drive by in a 50 Ford that looked like a tank, we would yell, all of us, Ma Ruse. And she would turn on the lights and kind of look around and see, but, you know, we were down the road to Johnson's by that time. So that's my first contact with this place.
No one knows exactly how Ma Ruse got that nickname. The history is a bit murky, but we know the lake got its name from the Harvey family, which owned a lot of the land and houses here in the 1800s. Before the cottages were built in the early 1900s, that main house we drove by on our way in was run by a Mrs. Kelly. The story goes that she let drifters walking along Route 4 eat and stay the night there for free.
Today's owners are Nancy and Lee Carver. They bought the Harvey cottages 13 years ago. We meet Nancy on her golf cart checking on the cottages.
We came up here looking for a vacation home and found this, and I like to bring things back to life.
She says these bright rainbow paint colors and the rainbow flags flying outside each cabin were inspired by where the Carvers vacation in Miami's South Beach.
And so we picked like the same hue so that they all worked really well together. And now we're kind of a destination. People know the colorful cottages all the way, you know, to Maine and back.
She says over half their visitors are repeat customers.
I think they like the peace and quiet. They love that they have their own little space. Most of them have their favorite cottages.
What I'm looking at right here is what I don't see at home.
Right.
That's what I'm looking at. I mean, my feet are literally in the sand right now, and I have 10 steps and I could go dive in the water.
This is Jill and Ron Morazzini, Harvey Cottage regulars. We find them by the Purple Cottage eating ice cream under a big beach umbrella. Ron says the cottage isn't the Taj Mahal.
It is what it is. It's a cottage. I mean, you can't expect a hotel room, but it's so relaxing.
Each time they're here, Jill decorates their cottage with lights and flags she brings from home. Usually it's Hawaiian themed.
The Morazzinis tell us they've been coming up here from their home in central Massachusetts for 4 years, and they've stayed in most of the different colored cottages. In their first year, they discovered the resident loon. Ron remembers one early morning when he was still in bed.
It was right in front of the orange cabin. And I'm laying down and I hear this thing go off. And I said, Jill, what the hell was that? It freaked me out. She says, it's the loon. That was the first time I ever heard a loon. It's a beautiful thing to see all the wildlife. But to hear that thing go off, it blew me away.
Russ and Eva from Rhode Island say it's not all natural beauty.
Okay, the only drawback to this place is the road out there. And the traffic on that road is 24/7, you know, lots of commercial trucks and lots of noise.
And they have one big tip.
Well, unless you have the AC on, in which case you won't hear it.
All this input from regulars makes us determined to relax like they do. We eat our dinner at the picnic table outside our cottage. We see fireflies in the trees around the lake. Then we head inside, crank up the AC, and go to bed.
I got a really good night's sleep.
I did too. I didn't even hear the road.
Oh, dragonflies coming in.
In the morning, it's cool. Kids are in the water chasing dragonflies.
Blue dragonfly.
Eva, Russ's wife, has already gone kayaking.
Particularly these times are nice when the water is just, you know, very, very peaceful, and you look out and it's mirror-like and you see just the sky reflected and the trees. And
I go swimming. The resident loon is gliding in the middle of the lake. When I get out, Jill and Ron are pulling back into their cottage. They'd planned to make a day trip to Hampton Beach, but they hit traffic on Route 4. They decided to leave it all behind and come back to Harvey Lake.
NHPR reporters Sarah Gibson and Annie Ropeek endured tough reporting conditions to bring us that story. Now, I'm feeling thirsty. You? NHPR's All Things Considered host, Peter Biello, is here now to tell us about our next stop along Route 4.
Yeah, and in this story, Route 4 is actually pronounced Route Foa. That's actually the correct pronunciation of a beer they have on tap at Blasty Bow Brewing Company in Epsom.
Yeah, a beer named after the road. That sounds pretty good. I take it the brewery is on the route.
It is very close to Route 4, just about a mile off the road in this rustic red barn with a porch, greenhouse surrounded by fields and plants, a very New Hampshire setting just off Route 4.
That sounds peaceful. I imagine, Peter, you had to do your due diligence on your research and sample some beer.
You know what? I had to, and actually it was really enjoyable. I also got a full tour of the place from the owner. The guy's name is Dave Stewart. He's 59 years old. He's owned the land where the brewery now sits for decades. For years, he farmed it, but that was losing money, so he decided to switch the farm's focus from food to beer. And for Stewart, it was kind of a natural shift. He's been homebrewing since the 1980s, and he really takes joy in the process.
It's kind of one of those things that lights up a bunch of places in your brain. I was a biology undergraduate, so the science appealed to me. There's a culinary aspect to it, which is fun, you know, figuring out what things might go together. There's a community aspect to it, and a tavern, you know, is a natural center of community.
It's here at the farm that Stewart grows the ingredients for his beer, even the hops, some of which grow wild in New Hampshire. Curled around the beams of the porch are Fuggles hops. He says you can find wild hops in New Hampshire if you know where to look.
They love to climb up the wires that are supporting telephone poles. So there was one on Route 106. Yeah, you just find them.
Not far from where those hops climb, in a room behind the bar, they're added to the beer. That's the sound of yeast turning sugars into alcohol and emitting carbon dioxide through an airlock. The yeast also comes from this farm. In fact, the only ingredient that doesn't come from here is the barley. But he says he's going to change that.
All four things will be from here. And the tagline is going to be more Epsom-y than ever.
That fourth thing, by the way, is the water, which is pumped from underground. So why make a beer named after Route 4? It's a highway that Stewart knows well. He grew up in Durham and traveled it often.
You know, you'd hit the Lee traffic circle first, and you'd cruise along, and then you'd end up going by Johnson's, and you'd see a couple of lakes, and then you'd end up at the Trojan Horse.
At the bar, I'm given a sample of the Route Foa. Root is spelled R-H-U-T-E, and is a nod to the rhubarb in the beer, which grows wild along the highway and at the farm. Aside from malty, I can't really come up with a description that'll do this beer justice. So I turn to Ed Burton, a contractor from Massachusetts, here on business.
I'm drinking the Route Foa, which is good. It's a rhubarb beer. That's got Cascade hop, Chinook. Yeah, you can taste like an orange peel type flavor. Got a little resinous backbone.
Burton's here so often for business that he's become a Blasty Bow regular. BJ Entwistle from Canterbury is another regular. She's a big fan of the musical guests that occasionally visit the gathering space upstairs above the bar.
They started with just musical things originally, so came for some of those, and those are wonderful. Small venue, acoustics, no amplification, great community. And then the beer came second.
She's holding a brown paper bag with beer she just bought for the weekend. Owner Dave Stewart says he gets a lot of travelers thanks to his location and alluring signage. The brewery is down the road from a collection of trendy cabins called Getaway, which attracts a lot of folks from the greater Boston area.
You know, it's pretty easy to tell that they're not from here, very well dressed, or they're young professionals. So folks will, you know, say, gee, are you staying over at the Getaway? And oh, yeah, where are you from? We're from Somerville, you know, we're up here for a couple of days. And from there, discussions ensue.
I can see this dynamic playing out between customers at the bar. Ed, the contractor, chats with a guy named Dan, an electrician from Baltimore. Ed's daughter sits nearby, and at her feet is her service dog, a Great Dane named George. Across the room is a couple vacationing from Haverhill, Massachusetts. Everyone's talking, drinking, and enjoying the evening. At Blasty Bow, community means whoever comes in, both locals and folks from away.
That story by NHBR's Peter Biello and summer intern Allie Pham. If a cup of coffee is more your thing, there is a place along Route 4 in Canaan that can help you out. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of options now that two cafes have opened not far from one another. NHPR's Daniela Alley gives us a peek into what it's like when a small town has a bit of a coffee shop boom.
It's 6:30 a.m. on a Tuesday. Donuts are fresh out of the fryer, and regulars at the 603 Bakery and Cafe can get either a cup of coffee or breakfast sandwich. Madison Nichols is sitting at his regular spot at the counter.
I usually order my blueberry muffin and my donut.
Nichols lives closer to a Dunkin' Donuts in Enfield, but since 603 opened, he's now coming here 6 days a week.
There really wasn't really a place to hang out. Now you got a place where you can come in, sit down, relax, and they don't rush you in, don't rush you out, and enjoy it. So Town of Canaan never really had anything out there like that.
In fact, when the town did a community survey a few years ago, one of the top things people wanted was a coffee shop. So when Grace Moore opened the bakery in February at 18 years old, it was the fulfillment of a childhood dream, one that she's planned out on a bulletin board filled with notes, sketches, lists she's kept since she was 8 years old. But there was one thing she did not anticipate.
Within a month or so of us opening, we had another cute bakery down the road that opened.
That shop is the Red Wagon Bakery, owned by Nellie Smith. As a kid, she too had dreamed of running a bakery one day. Growing up, she'd sell cookies, 25 cents a piece, out of her radio flyer Red Wagon to students at the boarding school where her parents worked in Massachusetts. She'd spent her summers in Canaan while her parents taught at Cardigan Mountain School and fell in love with the area. The day she signed her lease, and as her mom put it, signed her life savings away, was when she found out about the 603.
I mean, I just had this whole idea of, you know, I was going to be the place in town, and you know, anybody talking about a bakery, it was going to be me, not, oh, which one?
Both owners get asked constantly, is a town of 4,000 big enough to support two bakeries? That's something Mike Sampson, the town administrator, wondered too.
And the other issue is competition. And while we love free market economies, it's more a question of making sure that they don't cut each other's throats inadvertently.
So far, judging from the number of cars he counts at both cafes, from his office across the street, Sampson says things are going pretty well.
If they were identical, I would have been concerned.
Because if you ask folks in town and the owners themselves, these are two totally different places. A lot of 603's customers are the guys working at the Department of Transportation or in logging and employees from the town offices. So while there are baked goods like brownies, muffins, and freshly made donuts, the 603 also focuses on lunches that are hearty and quick to make. Meatloaf sandwiches, Cubanos, burgers, and grilled chicken sandwiches, for example.
It's just the blue-collared workers. It's the local guys that are coming in. And as much as they might like the cupcake that I wanted to put out that day, it's not going to fill them up. And they need a little more than that. And I think people really like to stop somewhere where they can get kind of their whole lunch satisfied. Like,
People tell me all the time, they're like, if you had gas, I would never go anywhere else.
Her mom likes to say that the 603 is rustic Canaan. There's a roll of paper towels on each table and a hot sauce station. Down the street at the Red Wagon, there's some lighter fare, frittatas, pies, mixed berry crumbles, salads, and on each table, a little glass vase filled with fresh flowers. The Red Wagon added dinner on Friday nights recently. Smith says that was inspired by her customers.
People had asked. There definitely been an interest. Have you ever thought of staying open later? Have you ever thought of doing nighttime hours?
Last Friday, Smith and her mom prepared fish tacos, empanadas, a farfalle, and Rosa sauce dish, and a crowd favorite, nachos. Amanda Roman was there for dinner with her family. She moved to Canaan 2 years ago and says she's excited there's a healthier place to eat. But back when the two bakeries first opened, she says she was nervous. Now she says she tries to support both of them.
We usually go to 603 on Saturday mornings for the waffles, and we come here to the Red Wagon on Sundays for the cinnamon rolls, which are amazing.
I got the cardamom bun, and I like it, the cardamom bun a lot.
This is Penelope, her 7-year-old. And for Penelope, having the Red Wagon and 603 in town means less time spent in the car, driving to Hanover or Lebanon for dinner.
Usually all the restaurants are like far, like 30 minutes away from us, but these two aren't. So that's why I like having a restaurant near us.
Word about these bakeries is spreading around the Upper Valley, and that's helping the owners of both the 603 and Red Wagon Bakery. They both say they're seeing more and more people coming from Lebanon, Hanover, and other nearby towns. They say people are finding reasons to keep coming back.
This series has its perks. And HBR's Daniela Alley reports she did have a donut and several cookies as she was researching that story. We're exploring Route 4 in New Hampshire this hour. I'm Rick Ganley. More after this break.